everyone, and welcome back to Presenting Pixie Dust. I'm Elizabeth Carr.
And I'm Brett Harvey.
And we are getting very metallic today.
Yes, we are.
Double the metallic.
Twice as metallic.
We are talking about Iron Man 2.
Yeah, yeah.
Today, we haven't done a Marvel movie in a really long time.
It's been a long time.
It feels like it has. The last one we did was Iron Man 1. So if you are new to the podcast, you haven't been following for very long, we are watching the Marvel movies in chronological order, story order.
That's right.
Not in the order that they were released.
No.
So we have done Captain America.
Yep.
Captain Marvel and Iron Man 1 so far.
Yeah.
And now we are up to Iron Man 2.
Yeah. Yeah, good times.
You sound so enthused.
No. I was just trying to think of something witty to say and I've got nothing.
I can't tell if you're being sarcastic.
I was thinking about Skinny Steve, you know?
And Buff Rogers.
Yeah, Buff Rogers and Skinny Steve.
We must be up to another Captain America movie soon.
Yeah.
I hope so. He's my favourite, you know, Captain America.
Yeah.
Used to be Iron Man and now I think I'm on a cap phase.
A cap phase.
Yeah.
You're a cap fan.
I'm a cap fan. Yeah. I do still love Iron Man, but I don't know, something about that shield. I don't know what it is.
Vibranium. Girls love the vibranium. Hey, before we get stuck into the movie itself, I've got a couple of social things to talk about.
Oh.
So first of all, for people out there who don't know, I wasn't really what I'd call a Disney fan.
No.
But through the process of meeting Elizabeth and engaging with her in the literal sense, in many ways, actually. And we've been married 2 years now.
Yay! 2 years, yeah, it was our anniversary. Was it yesterday? 2 days ago.
Yeah.
Yeah.
But in this process, she's basically Disneyfied me.
I have.
And now, sitting before you, is a guy wearing a Disney t-shirt.
A woman's Disney t-shirt.
And Disney slippers.
Yes.
Yeah, they're really lovely, slippers. Actually. And the other thing, too, is, so I'm being ruined, people. I've been ruined. I'm now a Disney man.
Well,
yeah, it's ruined. I've got like yin and yang. So I've got like my Harley Davidson kind of thing. It's kind of like the dark kind of, you know, evil side of things.
Midlife
and
crisis.
And then I've got Disney, which is kind of like the light, pretty side of things. It's kind of yin and yang.
Well, you're just a perfect man then, aren't you?
I'm all well-rounded. I'm definitely well-rounded in the middle. But, yeah, this is the other thing. So I made something for you last year.
Okay.
I think it was started last year.
Is this happening in real time? Okay.
Yeah, so I wanted to make you a sculpture. And so I got some clay and I started making this model of Mickey Mouse.
Uh-huh.
A lovely big standing model about 20 inches high. And things were going really well. And then, unfortunately, the part started to fall off. So I had a break at the knees first.
You broke his knees?
And he kind of fell down. And I was like, oh, this is no good. So I fixed him up again.
Oh, dear.
And then they broke again. And I fixed it up. And it broke. And I did this about 3 or 4 times.
Well, you know your knees are never the same after you break them the first time.
So then I got the knees sorted out and then one of the arms breaks off and then I managed to put it all back together and I was thinking, this is good, this is great. And then all of a sudden, this is over a course of a couple of weeks, mind you, I'm fixing it.
Mm-hmm.
It finally fell down and everything broke, including the head broke off the body.
Oh no, you decapitated him.
And you had been telling me, oh, you need to give up on it, you need to quit. And I was like, I'm not going to quit. And I ended up adjusting my expectations. So I saved the head.
Oh.
I have a bodiless Mickey.
Oh, wow.
And so now he's going to be, instead of a statue, he's like a desktop counterweight.
He's like a paperweight.
Paperweight, right? So
oh,
here you go.
So
there's
funny.
Your Disney
oh,
Mickey
thank
head.
You.
It's not official merchandise.
Very heavy.
It's very
Is it
heavy.
Solid?
It's solid. It's been fired.
Oh, wow.
So that's, yeah. So there you go. It's my little gift to you from the heart.
Thank you
and
so much. I'm going to put him right here on the desk. If you listen carefully, lovely listeners, you'll hear me put him down. there you go. That's how heavy that is.
Yeah, so.
Oh, thank you. I'll take a picture of it and put it on our socials.
They say give up what, you know, you should give up while you're ahead.
Uh-huh.
But I think I succeeded with just a head.
Just a head.
Yeah.
Are we ready to thank you? That's
I came
beautiful.
Out ahead in the end.
That is beautiful. Thank you very much.
No worries.
Can we talk about Iron Man?
Yeah.
Can we get
right.
into that? All
Let's
right.
do it.
Iron Man 2 had a premiere date of April 26th, 2010.
Yeah.
I said 2013. You asked me last night when was it released. I said, I don't know, about 2013. No, 2010. So it's a long time ago.
Yeah,
now.
Yeah, it was.
Where do you think it premiered?
The Al Capitan Theatre.
In Hollywood, California. Yeah. You are correct. It has a runtime of 125 minutes and a current IMDb rating of 6.9 and 71% on Rotten Tomatoes.
Yeah.
That is the closest comparison I think we've ever had of IMDb to Rotten Tomatoes. I think the first Iron Man movie rated higher than that.
Yeah, and you can see why. I think, you know, we always find this is really hard to have a sequel. And there's even some movies that the sequel's not as good, but the third movie is, like, better. We see that in things like Jurassic Park.
Cars.
Oh, Cars. That's what we were talking about Cars the other day.
We were talking about Cars the other day.
Yeah, number two is a bit...
And, but number three is
number
excellent.
Number three is excellent. Yeah. So sometimes you just got to get through the bad stuff to get to the good. But
I'm going to say something controversial.
Yeah.
I think I preferred this one to the first one.
Really? Why's that?
I feel like this one was just... for lack of a better word, flashier.
Yeah.
It was just like a little bit more shiny, a bit more.
Well, we spend a lot of time in the first one with the whole escaping
building
the cave.
Suit and escaping.
So the whole origin story takes up like half the movie, and he only spends maybe half at the most being Iron Man.
Yeah.
I'm using quotation fingers here, in his like red suit.
Yeah.
But it's all the development of it, which I think is great if you love that stuff. But this one is just like he's already Iron Man from the start.
And I think that we see more of Tony Stark's sort of everyday life.
Yeah.
Just the glamour and the glitz and the opulence and the wealth of his life is just more interesting to me than the cave.
Than the mechanics of creating the character. Yeah,
I mean,
okay. That's
just
fair.
Just for me.
No, that's fair.
It's my personal.
Yeah, whereas I'm probably the opposite to that.
So you like the first one better
I like the development of the Iron Man suit.
Yeah. I think that we definitely get to see more of Tony Stark's character being built in this one, though, with the, spoiler alert, with like the sort of his impending death.
Yeah.
Coming and him feeling like his loss of control over the situation.
It's very humanized.
Yeah. And I think that
it's the human inside the robot.
Yes.
Mm. Dun, dun, dun.
What makes the robot and what makes the man?
Yeah.
I preferred this one. I enjoyed this one. I feel like in the first one I found myself getting a little bit bored at times. And this is not the first time I've seen these movies. Like, I've seen them many times, but I think with this one.
Where did I say that? It was like somewhere where it said, does the suit make the man or does the man make the suit?
I don't know.
I feel like that's something out of Iron Man
probably.
Somewhere. But I must have read it somewhere.
Yeah.
Maybe I was looking it up online.
Maybe.
But anyway, that's kind of true, isn't it?
Yeah.
With a lot of these superhero movies is that, you know, is that it's that whole thing about that, yes, they've got superpowers, but it's the person behind the powers that makes them powerful, not the powers themselves.
But what I do like about Iron Man is that Iron Man Tony Stark doesn't have superpowers. He's just smart.
Yeah.
that is his superpower, is that he's very smart and he's very knowledgeable.
And rich.
That helps.
He's a Batman.
Yeah, he is. He's the Batman. He's the Batman of the... So the suit is what makes him a superhero.
Yeah.
He is...
He's
just a guy.
A hero.
He's not, you
but
know,
the suit
Thor
makes him the super
or Hulk
hero.
Or Captain America, who all have superpowers.
Yeah, magical kind of superpowers.
Yeah, he is
just
blessed really with smart.
Being smart. And he had a good college and education.
And he's got a good support network.
That's right. Yeah. Pepper Potts. Anyway, it was still on fun facts, honey.
I got distracted. All right, so
yeah.
John Favreau is the director of this movie. He also directed the first... Iron Man movie.
Yeah, he did.
But he did have a lot of friction with the Marvel higher-ups due to their constant intervention, to the point that they were having him rewrite the script as the film was still shooting. In particular, elements such as the increased prominence of the S.H.I.E.L.D. subplot were a result of the need to establish the greater Marvel Cinematic Universe in preparation for the Avengers in 2012, at the expense of the coherence of the film's own plot. These disputes got so bad that Favreau turned down directing Iron Man 3.
Really?
Yeah, so he did not direct
it. He was a bit over it.
Well, yeah, I mean, I suppose I see where they're coming from, because when you're setting up for the Avengers and all of a sudden we're getting many more characters through the S.H.I.E.L.D. network.
Yeah.
And that came out in 2012, so that was quite soon after this movie came out.
Mm.
that it is, yeah.
They're starting to lay the trail for the series.
But as a director, and you want to make a coherent movie that makes sense and can stand on its own.
Yeah, it was kind of, put it this way, this movie could have done without that easily.
Yeah.
There was enough going on, and it almost did look like a bit of a throw-in when you look, if you look closely at it. The way that Nick Fury and Black Widow come into it really kind of doesn't need to be there.
I liked the way they brought Black Widow in, though, because she wasn't brought in as, you know, she was brought in as this sort of undercover character, because Tony now needs a new assistant because Pepper's been, she's
become
been promoted.
CEO. Yeah, I can get it. I get that it's been written in, but I kind of feel like it didn't need to be there at all. But anyway, that's obviously, I'm like John Favreau.
Yeah, you're right. Yeah. All right, so on the subject of Nick Fury, Samuel L. Jackson's cameo as Nick Fury in Iron Man was a landmark for the MCU before the MCU was even a thing. Contract negotiations almost kept him from continuing on, though. Then, to get Jackson into Iron Man 2, the actor signed an unprecedented 9-film deal with Marvel.
Really?
Yeah.
There you go.
Because he's like only in Iron Man very briefly.
Yeah.
Very, very briefly. Yeah, and then he has bigger part in this one.
Yeah.
9 films they signed him on for as this character to get him to keep going.
It's like, yeah, you can don't have to say yes to anything else. We're going to look after you.
Yeah, absolutely.
He's essentially signing on to a movie franchise for, what did you say, nine movies?
9 films, yeah.
Where he doesn't say, mother, mm-mm. I mean, that's got to be like an absolute change of focus for him. He was known as the mother person.
He's got the good Disney dollars coming in now.
That's true.
Though
that's
when
true.
This movie was came out, Marvel was not owned by Disney.
Yeah.
Yeah.
Well, that's
so,
true. Yeah.
Yeah, they hadn't
acquired it yet.
Acquired by Disney at this point.
Yeah.
I think it was after the Avengers. I did talk about that when we did the fun facts for Iron Man, I think. And I don't quite remember what year it was, but it was, I'm sure that, because this was the second movie of phase one of the MCU. Yeah. So we had Iron Man, then Iron Man 2, and they hadn't acquired it yet. I think it was after this film that that Disney acquired Marvel. All right, fun fact number 3. A lot of Vanko's identifying features were suggested by Mickey Rourke. He wanted to perform half of his role in Russian. And consulted on the character's tattoos and gold teeth, as well as having a pet cockatoo.
Yeah.
That was his idea. In fact, Rourke paid for the bird and the gold teeth out of his own pocket.
Really? But
that was very important to the character.
There you go.
He's a funny...
No wonder he wanted his bird so much. Yeah, it was literally his bird.
Must have been. All right, fun fact number 4. In the comics, Tony Stark possesses a suitcase containing a portable suit of armor.
Yeah.
This famous suitcase armor has been revised for the film. The suitcase converts into a series of plates that slide over a wire framework.
Hmm.
That's a direct throwback from the comics.
There you
I
go.
Haven't read any of the Iron Man comics. Have you?
Nah.
No. Okay. Well, nah. It's in the comics.
Yeah.
Comic people will know. Fun fact number 5. The 80s rock band AC/DC is a prominent part of the soundtrack in Iron Man and Iron Man 2. In Iron Man 2, the AC/DC song that's playing when Tony lands at the Stark Expo is Shoot to Thrill.
Mm.
We hear this song again in The Avengers during the scene where Tony defeats Loki for the first time.
There you go.
How much do you think it costs to get the entire AC/DC back catalogue?
I don't know.
Because I've been listening to the Office Ladies podcast, which is a recap of the Office series, which we're huge fans of over here. And they talk a lot about how much it costs to acquire the rights to use a song and the different ways that you can use it. So do you just want the backing? Is someone singing along, but you're not going to hear someone singing it, but you're not hearing the actual song? Someone's just singing it out loud. And it costs like tens of thousands of dollars to get the rights to use a song. So I wonder how much it, not that they didn't have money, but, you know.
I'd think that'd be the least of their financial burdens.
These are just things I think about now.
Yeah, there you go.
Fun fact number 6. The old film of Howard Stark that Tony projects is very reminiscent of Walt Disney's filmed pitch for Epcot.
Yeah, I wrote that down.
You did, I know. The Walt Disney Company acquired Marvel Entertainment. Oh, here we go. I knew I'd read it recently. The Walt Disney Company acquired Marvel Entertainment in August 2009, about 9 months before the release of Iron Man 2.
Mm.
So while this movie was being... Iron Man 1, they did not have the rights to Marvel, but Iron Man 2,
I wonder if that ever, you know... I wonder if they'd ever kind of put a question mark over its release date or something. You know how when one company takes over another, sometimes it can affect their flow? And Anyway, it's just a thought.
Well, it's interesting because I wonder, well, they would have still been filming, so I wonder if the, or maybe they hadn't. I don't know how long after, like, wrapping filming on a movie, the movie comes out. So I'm wondering if, I'm just wondering out loud, if they had that Howard Stark, Walt Disney sort of throwback before they knew Disney was taking it over.
Yeah.
Or if they were in talks, because they would have been in talks for a really long time to take it over, and they decided to put that in as a show of good faith.
Don't know. Interesting, though.
I don't know. Fun fact number 7. When Rhodey is called as a witness for the Senate hearing right near the start of the movie, he whispers to Tony, "It's me and I'm here, so get over it and move on." This is a meta reference to Terrence Howard, who played Rhodey in the first Iron Man movie. It's a wink to the fans that Don Cheadle is now the actor behind the character, and not to nitpick it any further.
Yeah.
Yeah, so he did you pick that up, that he wasn't there?
No.
It's been a long time since not the original. Yeah, that he's not the original actor who played Rhodey. And finally, fun fact number 8, Emily Blunt in the MCU. It could have happened.
Yeah.
She was in talks to play Black Widow early on. However, she couldn't take the role on because she was contracted to co-star in Jack Black's Gulliver's Travels.
Oh,
while overseas markets saved that movie, it was a critical flop and only made $48 million domestically from a budget of $112 million. That movie has been forgotten, and Blunt didn't end up as Black Widow in the MCU.
No. Dun, dun, dun.
That role, of course, went to Scarlett Johansson.
Yeah, I think that she was a good choice for that role. Yeah.
Yep, absolutely.
She looks the part and performs the stunts very well.
So she is another superhero, in air quotes, that doesn't have powers.
No. She's just a hero. She's trained.
Yeah.
A bit like the guy who does the arrows.
Yes. Nighthawk.
What's his name? Renner.
Nighthawk. That's his name. Yeah.
Nighthawk.
Yeah.
Jeremy Renner, by the way, congratulations on your recovery, mate. Yeah. You're doing really well.
He's doing really
Keep
well.
Keep it up. Did you hear he got superpowers.
Absolutely. He had like 35 bones crushed.
Yeah.
That's like completely obliterated, poor thing. But no, he's doing really well.
So, look, you know, they're certainly, Scarlett's good to have on screen.
Yeah.
I think she does a good job for that role. It's a weird kind of thing having people like her that don't have superpowers, but somehow they find a way of writing them into the script that they make a difference.
Mm-hmm.
You know, when you're talking about, even when it gets on even further in the universe, where you've got beings from another world that have got like big laser cannon gun things and these big kind of creatures and all this sort of stuff, and you got these, essentially they're just humans that have got some skills, and somehow they're standing beside a Hulk or a Loki or a Thor,
an actual demigod,
you know, and somehow we're still expected to believe that they can make kind of a difference enough for them to be written into this story. And I'm like, anyway, it's weird. There's some things I just can't buy. I
try. Man with the suit with the palladium core that keeps his heart going, that's fine.
Yeah, I can buy that.
That we can get on board with.
Yeah.
But the girl who just like has no powers but manages to win, we can't get on board with that one.
But anyway, I suppose it's a way of connecting those superhero characters to the humans, you know, to the normal humans.
Keep it in reality.
Yeah, that's right.
So we're hit straight away in this movie with the introduction of our villain. We've headed to Moscow and we can hear the voiceovers of Tony's I Am Iron Man press conference.
Yeah, I was really impressed by this, the beginning.
I thought it was cool too.
Because we had a bit of a chuckle and go, oh, I wonder if they'll do a previously on Iron Man.
That's what I was like, can we do that? Because I don't remember what happened.
And it was, and it was such a clever way of doing it. Such a clever way of doing it.
Absolutely.
And you were sort of saying that, we hear it on the television in Russia.
Yeah.
So we get
in Moscow,
and in Moscow, so we get that whole, at the same, two stories in it at the same time, which is that we know it's following on straight from the last one.
Yeah.
But we also get this idea about the bad guy that's involved. We don't know he's bad yet, but we do look at him, don't we?
He looks
Ivan. And I think maybe Mickey Rourke's done a great job to make us know straight away that he's a villain.
Well,
like, we look at him and
we get the father too, Anton, who says, he says to his father, Anton, he says, that should be you.
Yeah.
When they're talking, when they're praising Iron Man and the suit and the, and they're praising all of these things that have been done. He says, you know, that should be you. And we see the blueprint of the arc reactor.
Yeah.
As well. So I think that that was a really clever way of starting it. And what is really great about this movie too is it really does stand on its own. You don't need to have seen the first one.
No.
To watch this one and have it make sense. And a lot of those early Marvel movies, the first, you know, few, you don't need to have seen the original. I saw the second Captain America, The Winter Soldier. I saw that in New York in 2014, and I'd never seen the first one. I didn't see the first one till we watched it together, and that made sense to me and I could follow the story. So I think that this movie also does a really good job of that, is that we follow it and it's all good, and we understand he's Iron Man, and we don't need to have seen the first part to understand what's going on.
And we see that this fella, the father, dies.
Mm.
And we kind of know, without having it to be laboured or spoken about even, we know what Ivan's motivation for everything that he does after that. We know what it is. It's that, it's that his dad's died, an unsung
hero,
contributor of this
of Stark Industries
phenomenon, you know.
And we know he's not wrong.
Like, no.
The way he goes about it is not great, but he's not completely unjustified.
The whole attempted murder stuff is not good, but
he's not completely unjustified in his feelings.
No, it's not unjustified.
No.
And it kind of is like, what would you do? You know, if that was you, what would you do? You'd probably want revenge.
Yeah, and we see him start to make his own sort of arc reactor.
Yeah.
Thingamabob from the blueprint, which is it's just a really great way to start the movie.
Yeah,
brings you right in,
and it also parallels Tony's making the technology in the cave.
Yeah,
in the first one, Ivan's doing it in his kind of his little backyard,
his little
shop,
bunker.
You know, in the shed out the back. You know, and it's kind of like what this tells us too is that here is a very intelligent man, in the same way as Tony. They both came from two fathers that were very intelligent and skilled in their field,
and have
scientific field, have passed it on to them.
Absolutely.
And so we know that this is a contender to be someone who can potentially match Tony.
Straight away, we get this.
Yeah.
We've got the first Stark Expo since 1974, and we see Tony sort of fly in. There's dancers and a stage and music and
sexy
and
dancers.
This event, this expo, is going to run all year long.
Yeah.
I think what could they possibly fill a year of time with?
Well, sexy dancers.
Well, that's it. I mean, yeah.
This is America.
Yeah, that's it. Yeah. And the Senate calls him to discuss the suit and the implications. So I thought that that was really interesting, because that almost sort of grounds it in reality as well. There is no way that you could create a weapon that is this powerful, which is what the suit is, and not have the government want it
for their own control.
Yeah, want
controlling
control,
interest.
Yeah, and want control over it, so you can't use it however you want, and also want you to make more for them so they can have their own.
Right.
So it's not special anymore and it's not just yours.
Well, it does happen. Historically, it has happened many times in the past where people have essentially developed technologies either at home, or in a university or something, and the government come in and go, we want this, it's ours now. Because
can they seize it, or do they have to buy it?
I don't know. That's sort of details. But you know, it's the whole the need to control that technology.
Yeah.
Because it could be used against them.
Absolutely.
And in the case of Iron Man, well, look, we know it's controlled by Tony, and he's a bit of a loose cannon.
Mm-hmm.
You know, so. And he's also very, and it gets spelled out for us in this movie, he's very much a narcissist.
Mm. He's an anti-hero.
Yeah.
Yeah.
So,
he's not your Captain America doing good things for the good of the world. He's that too, but he definitely has his.
Well, he's got the potential to be, and that's where the Avengers does come into it. It's about refining Tony's practice to make sure it's for the good of mankind.
Yeah.
Not for selfish gain.
Yeah. Because we definitely see the selfish gain when he's parading around on stage in front of everyone.
And we see it in the first one as well, when he goes back to the cave and blows out all up the dudes and kills them all.
Yeah.
It's retribution. He's going back to settle a score. So, you know, he's human too.
Yeah, absolutely.
And,
We see people around the world trying to make their own version of the suit as well. So which always happens with new technology, doesn't it?
Yeah.
You know, other people are trying to make their version and it's not as good as his, but they could potentially, you know, get onto something and make something that's dangerous and...
Yeah, but reverse engineering, I think they called it.
So they see his suit and they're trying to create a reasonable dupe that they can sell.
Yeah, but they are very unsuccessful, and Tony proves that to them in the committee meeting, congressional hearing. I think that's quite interesting, you know. And Colonel Rhodes is called in to basically speak against Tony and Iron Man, but turns around and kind of is in support of Tony. You know, the need for it to be sort of regulated, but also that it's Tony's suit, Tony's, you know, intellectual property, all of that. So it's kind of like, he advocates for him.
Absolutely. We do see in Tony's, like, workspace, his garage, for lack of a better term.
Yeah.
It's not his only suit. He's got many suits that he's been working on and creating. But his biggest problem in this is, so we have a few different, like, underlying storylines. So we have Ivan Vanko, who's got this vendetta against Tony, justified or not.
Yep.
We've got Tony, who is now a star for being Iron Man, but is dying, essentially, because his palladium levels are increasing. The cores are running out too fast, because he's using the suit too often, and that is really making that happen as well. That's making the process go faster. And he's hiding this from everybody.
Mm.
Those are sort of the two storylines that are running,
and you've got the government trying to shut him down as well.
Yeah, and Hammer
and you've got Hammer Industries. Yeah, so trying to kind of, you know, duplicate the technology or, you know, match it.
But they want to use them as weapons of war. That's why at the end he's got Vanko to create army versions and navy versions and air force versions and marine versions. You know, they want to use them in place of soldiers.
Yeah.
As weapons of war. They call them the drones, I suppose, because there's no human manning them.
Mm.
And I suppose that is the flaw with Tony's suit, is that he has to be in it. You know, he's got control over it, whereas the drones that Vanko is creating for Hammer are not manned by... Oh, they're manned by a person, but a person far away can do it. It doesn't have to be a person control That's there. Yeah.
Well, we see that with modern technology too now, with the drones that, you know, sent to places, you know, like the conflict
in the Ukraine.
So, you know, it kind of mirrors real life in that respect as well. But going back to Tony and this palladium situation, to me, it's almost like, you know, it's almost like to him a cancer.
Mm-hmm.
And people can empathize with that, where you carry this burden.
This invisible burden.
And, you know, he's not willing to share it with Pepper. He's not willing to share it with Rhodes. He's not willing to tell the public or Happy. You know, it's sort of, he's carrying it silently. And in the end, he's forced to confront it through Rhodes.
Yeah.
So all of this stuff's happening. I think that's what makes this movie pop a little bit, is that you've got a number of antagonistic themes going through it, you know.
And I think that really brings out sort of Tony's internal struggle, is that we get that really early on. We see the increase of the palladium levels in his blood, which cause him to do these reckless things.
Mm.
And the scene at the Monaco Grand Prix is my favourite scene in the movie. It's so good because we see Tony get in the car. Pepper's got no idea what's going on. She's running the company. No. She doesn't know what's happening. She can't control this loose cannon of a man who's, you know, going to run the company into the ground and possibly kill himself. But now he's racing in the Grand Prix because he owns a car in it. So apparently that means you can kick the driver out and get in it yourself.
Well, the driver gets really angry about that.
I saw that. But the scene where we are introduced to Vanko, where Tony sees him, oh my gosh, and he's coming through like the smoke and the haze and the wiggly like heat lines, and you can see those
laser
like electric rope things. It's so cool. Yeah. And you almost sort of, I mean, you don't want Tony to die, but like, it's amazing seeing this character who's bare chested except for this well, the, his the, own the, little
his
arc reactor.
Shirt kind of burns off him with the, you know, electrification of his weapon.
And I think that I'm just a big fan of any weapon that's not a gun, because I think that in action movies, guns are not interesting. That's why I really like lightsabers, because they feel like they're cool and they're interesting. And this weapon of these electric whip things, I think that the character's name is actually Whiplash. It's the name of the character when I was doing my research, but they never refer to him as Whiplash in the movie. But I think in the comics or wherever the characters come from, Whiplash is the name of the character. I think that it's just so interesting and so cool to watch because it just feels more intimate than a gun.
Yeah, I was going to say that.
When you watch, even when you watch some of those Star Wars movies where they, it's all like pew, 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 pew. And I'm like, oh, this is boring. Get out the lightsabers. Like, the guns aren't interesting. Guns aren't interesting. This was an interesting weapon. And this was really cool.
Well, I always say that a lot of movies fall, the problem they fall into is if they try to make their battle scenes too big, we lose the intimacy. And to me, a good fight scene doesn't have to have thousands of CGI, you know, generated bloody characters.
You just need a couple of characters.
A couple of characters. You know, we do see that with Black Widow when she goes in with Happy to later on, and she, you know, immobilizes a dozen guys in the same time it takes Happy to have a fist fight with one dude, you know, which is a bit of comic relief too. But, you know, it was more interesting to watch her fight those guys in different ways than it was to see the robots shooting, you know, explosives at Tony, you know, in many ways.
Because guns are boring.
Yeah. But,
it's boring. You
but
can't,
going yeah. back to Whiplash, very impressive weapon conceptually. I think it's
really
great.
Cool.
And it's very, very different from Tony's Iron Man.
Yeah.
So that's good. Whereas in the first one, the bad dude makes another Iron Man type suit. So it's Iron Man against Iron Man sort of thing. Whereas this one's a completely different kind of threat.
And he doesn't have all the armor that Tony's got. Tony's still sort of semi-removed from it because he's behind a barrier. He's got the suit and he's behind that.
Got some level of protection.
Yeah, whereas this guy is just bare-chested flicking some electric ropes around and it's just, it's really cool.
Yeah.
It was so, so cool.
Yeah, so he swings his whips around and he chops some cars in half and they sort of smash and explode and stuff. And I really like this sequence because I think I said to you at the time, visually it looks spectacular.
Yeah.
But it's done so well that it looks plausible.
Yeah.
You know, that if he did actually whip those cars like that, that they could potentially do those things. You know, and obviously it's this movie is, what, 12 years old now, and to sit down and watch it and see that CGI still actually look really good a decade later is really impressive. You know, they did such a good job of it. And, of course, he whips Tony's car in half and Tony manages to sort of get out and they have a bit of a Barney and punch on and he uses his little special briefcase that you mentioned earlier.
Yeah, his little briefcase suit.
And it involves Happy and it also involves Pepper as well in this fight scene. So I think it's quite well orchestrated, very well orchestrated.
Yeah. Yeah, I just think it's really cool. And but we did have a few questions as where are the police?
Yeah.
Like, why is no one stopping this?
Why is no one trying to stop this?
Yeah, no
where
one
is
trying.
Security?
Yeah, where is security?
The Monaco Grand Prix.
The Monaco. Oh, my goodness. The Monaco Grand Prix, not the Monaco Grand Prix, for goodness sake.
Potato, potato.
It's not a potato. No one says potato. But where this is a major event. This is a huge event. There's no security around. No one's trying to stop this from happening, probably because security is going, I'm not getting involved in that. Thank you very much. But I just, it was my favourite scene.
It says more about Italian security. Hey, what's going on over there?
And I just love that the way that they get him in the end is Pepper and Happy hit him with the car.
Yeah, that's right.
And that's what stops him, is that they hit him with the car and they sort of pin him up against the thing. I just thought
what it says a lot of is that Pepper's not really a fighter.
No.
Like she squeals and she's frightened by all of this. She happens to be in the car with Happy.
Yeah.
But she's relatively ineffective as a person in the scene, and it shows that she's very vulnerable. She's not a Tony, she's not a Happy,
She has no fighting skills.
She has other skills that help Tony, very human qualities and, you know, organizational qualities, blah, blah, blah. But you know, she's almost his vulnerability is, you know, she is the... And it happens later on in the movie. We see this where she gets targeted. But anyway, so, yeah, excellent scene.
I love it.
Probably the best part of the movie.
It's my favourite scene.
Yeah, and poor Ivan, he does get knocked out a bit. He does get trumped this time.
Poor Ivan? Is that what... Poor
Ivan. I don't know. I just seemed like a guy who just... He had a job to do and he had good reason and... Anyway... I'm not advocating violence, people. I'm just saying.
And once his sort of presence and his existence is revealed to Tony, that's when we get the reveal of the fact that his father, it's explained to him, you know, his father, Anton Vanko, actually invented the
arc reactor.
The arc reactor.
And, so, yeah. We also see that, you know, Hammer comes in and he's trying to get on Ivan's side and he's been Ivan's, you know, supporter to get to Monaco.
Well, he busts him out of jail.
Yeah, so he's kind of his, as he said, his benefactor with massive ulterior motives, you know. It's not just about, you know, one-upping Tony. It's about taking control of that industry of weapons.
Because Hammer's already got this whole fleet of suits that he's started.
Yeah.
And
he needs someone who's whiz with tech.
Yeah, because Hammer has the money, but he doesn't have the brains.
Nah, that's
he's
right.
not smart enough to do this. He can fund it, but he can't create it. Whereas Vanko and Tony both have that skill set of being able to create the technology that's going to make these weapons superior.
Mm.
Tony's spiraling. It's his birthday. He's spiraling. He's playing in the suit and shooting things. And then Rhodey appears in the suit. And, you know, it's all that sort of the, I would say that's probably his sort of emotional sort of climax of.
Yeah, he's a bit of his undoing. He's a bit like, it's like a drunken frat boy.
Well, that's it.
You know.
He's just spiraling because he knows he's dying and he can't talk about it with anyone.
He's been one-upped in front of the world by Ivan, even though they beat him.
But he didn't beat him. Pepper and Happy saved him in that moment. He was unprepared and I think that
the world knows
and
it.
And the world saw it. Yeah. yeah. And now everyone's
which
reporting.
Which is what Hammer wants. He wants the world to turn on Tony.
And all of the news reports are reporting that Iron Man was bested.
Mm.
That, you know, he's fallen off his pedestal, basically, and now he's spiraling. And another one bites the dust.
Yeah.
but then, you know, we get Nick Fury and Black Widow and, you know, Natalie Rushmore's real identity is revealed.
Yeah.
She's working as, she's a S.H.I.E.L.D. agent. And, oh, now Tony can't tell anyone who she is and it's all sort of come to light.
And Tony's had this big bust up with Rhodes, you know, and Rhodes has taken the suit. And it's a bit of a tricky thing because Rhodes, on one hand, is Tony's friend.
Yeah.
But at the end of the day, he's military and his allegiances are actually more for the military than to Tony. So he takes the suit back to his, you know, his military base and basically says, let's pimp it out with some guns and stuff. And it more or less becomes theirs.
That felt like a betrayal to me.
Yeah. Exactly.
And I don't think that that was really focused on enough, that he stole...
Tony kind of forgives him a bit.
He stole his
too
suit.
Easily.
He took it to the military and...
And then
that
ends up gets used against Tony, you know?
It was... I feel like, when I was watching it, I was thinking, have I missed something? Because this just feels like... like a bigger deal than they made of it.
No,
that he took this suit. Yeah. I think it was like his... Was it one of his first suits? It didn't feel like...
It was Mark II.
Yeah, it wasn't a flashy suit like the one he's got, like his red suit.
No.
But it was, you know, it was just made of steel and iron, I suppose. But it, you know, it just still felt like a big deal.
Yeah.
Another big deal that we found out that sort of, again, was I felt like it was just sort of glossed over, was that in his conversation with Nick Fury and Black Widow, we find out that Howard Stark deported Anton because it was, so that's Vanko's father, the one who made the arc reactor initially, because he was a loose cannon, basically.
Yeah.
He was, you know, not doing well. And that Howard Stark was a founding member of S.H.I.E.L.D.
Mm.
Yeah. And it's just sort of said, and we zoom in on Tony's face. He sort of has his like Young and the Restless moment when the bit where there's a big sort of reveal of information, and there's the music, and we zoom in on his face. But then it's not mentioned again.
Yeah.
It's just like, okay, moving on. Maybe that was the setup for the Avengers. Maybe this is all these little things where I feel like it's not. Why are we not focusing on this?
Mm.
Were little setup things for the Avengers. Rhodey gives the suit to Hammer. Does he give it to? I felt like he gave it to.
Yeah, he basically does. Yeah.
Rude. Like, yeah. Why are we not? Yeah. Like, that's a second betrayal. You've got two strikes now, Rhodey. He just gives it to him. Yeah, and I just feel like it's. And another thing that I don't understand about this movie is why is Stark Industries, why is Tony letting Hammer give a presentation at the expo?
Mm.
That was my other question, because that's sort of like the action climax of the movie.
Yep.
Is that Hammer's giving this presentation. He's going to unveil these suits that Vanko's been working on for him. And he just, why have we not stopped him? If he's the competition, that would be like Samsung getting up at the Apple Expo
yeah.
and saying, hey, yeah. look at our new phone too.
Yeah, that's like, right.
I don't understand yeah. why. I yep. don't understand why he's letting that happen.
That'd be like Sony rocking up and giving a presentation at D23.
Like, look at all our movies.
Yeah, look at our movies.
Why are we letting this happen?
Or well, what doesn't Disney own? Not Warner Brothers. Is it Warner Brothers?
He doesn't own. They don't own Warner Brothers.
You'd be like, Warner Brothers.
Yeah.
Rocking up at yeah. D23 and going, hey, check out our movies. Yeah. No, you wouldn't have it. Would never happen.
No.
Why is Hammer getting up at Stark Expo?
Well, it's because Pepper doesn't know what she's doing. That's why. Because Tony's not in charge of this anymore.
Yeah, maybe
Pepper's
that's
in charge.
What it is. Yeah, so, yeah. Could
and
be.
Pepper's let him do it.
Now, speaking of the Stark, the expo. Right?
Yes.
So there's something that's important here that I noticed.
Okay.
When Hammer comes out to do his presentation, he does a little bit of a dance.
Okay.
And it's Sam Rockwell's the actor. And he comes out and does a bit of a dance. With his sort of cool leggy flicks and his spins and this sort of stuff. And he's got this kind of almost like breaking ankles sort of thing going on, which is quite cool. But it reminded me of something.
Mm-hmm.
And it reminded me of when Sam Rockwell was in Charlie's Angels in the year 2000.
Mm-hmm.
And he virtually does the same bad guy dance routine.
Okay.
Yeah. He does a few spins.
He plays an excellent villain.
Yeah, he does play an excellent villain. Very cool. So he's doing his little leggy breaks, his little ankle break dances. Looking all cool with his slushy, sliding around. There he is. And I just thought that was really funny that he used to had. I wonder whether they kind of said, hey, can you do the dance for us?
No, he would have just said, come out and dance onto stage. And that's what he would have done.
Can you do the bad guy dance for us from Charlie's Angels?
He plays an excellent bad guy, I think, because he's a little bit like weedy looking. Like he kind of reminds me of the way that he speaks and the way that he sort of presents himself reminds me quite a lot of Hades and Hercules. That
yeah.
he doesn't have that sort of deep voice, menacing sort of scariness about him.
And he's very businesslike.
Yeah.
But he's not muscular or anything
no.
like that. He's kind of...
He does yeah, play a great villain.
He's kind of like the kind of guy that could hurt you with the power that he wields.
Yeah.
Whatever it is.
Anyway. I also love the scene where Tony is working out his dad's notes. So he watches
yeah.
the video and then you see him in the background as a young child playing with the diorama that his dad has made that's reminiscent of Epcot. And then we see the blueprints and everything and then how it starts talking directly to Tony,
mm.
like through the camera, like that he's filmed this ages ago saying all of this is for you.
Yeah.
You know, I'm doing all of this for you. All this hard work is for
Very
you.
Very heartfelt moment.
Which I think is really important to Tony because I think that the relationship between Howard and Tony is very distant. His dad was probably just always working, always involved in the company and has brought Tony up to take that over. But this is a moment of humanizing that relationship, this father-son relationship, because I think that was sort of healing Tony's inner child a bit.
Yeah.
Of this was something he really needed to hear from his dad when he's having this crisis. He's, you know, the world is turning against him. He's going to die because nothing has been successful in replacing the Palladium core, even though Nick Fury sort of gave him the little, you haven't tried everything, keep trying, you haven't tried everything. Couldn't actually tell him the answer, but, you know, told him, you know, you haven't tried everything. And he uses the diagram. He sort of lifts. He uses the diorama and lifts in his, like, bat cave, right? Lifts the prints off it and then uses, you know, takes away the trees and takes away. It was very, like, Minority Report, the way he's shifting things around the screen, like, using his hands to, like, swish things away and everything, and then uncovers this new element that he doesn't give a name to, but this new element that will replace the palladium core and wax it in. And he's, like, supercharged now.
Yeah. It's like he's.
That was really cool.
Yeah.
I love that scene.
Going back to what his dad said. So his dad says something along the lines of, you know, you are the one who can solve the problem of your heart, which I thought should be written on a Hallmark card, you know. So it kind of like, it's like a double meaning there, because obviously his heart's literally suffering from the palladium.
Yeah.
But also in terms of his own heart healing, I suppose, from maybe his upbringing and the troubles that he's had.
Yeah.
And feeling a bit distant from his father. But there's a lovely moment where he says, the dad says, my greatest creation was always and always will be you, something like that, which is really nice, because about 30 seconds earlier in the video, we see him reprimand Tony because Tony's touching the diorama.
Yeah, little Tony.
Put it back, maybe, you know. Tony, yeah. So we see that obviously Howard's got like a really stern, authoritarian approach to Tony as a young child, but deep down he really does care for him and love him in a way that Tony isn't aware until he hears it from his dad himself, the words that he needs to hear exactly right time.
So the action climax at the end was okay.
So we get the hammer demonstration. So back to that, hammer comes. He reveals all of his very impressive robots, all dressed out in
their... The drones. Army drones, Navy drones, Air Force drones, and Marine drones.
Yeah.
And then we, throughout the drone presentation, Rhodey arrives?
Well, no, I think... Rhodey comes up first.
Yeah.
So the droids come up first, or the drones, and then Rhodey comes up as well.
Oh, that's right. Yeah, and then that's revealed.
He's like the piece à la resistance.
Yeah,
and he's all decked out with some guns and stuff, and Hammer's standing with him, and you know, it's all very impressive. And then
Tony arrives
on
the scene.
Yeah,
and then Vanko remotely starts overriding.
Yeah.
And I thought that was cool.
Yeah.
Thought that, okay, that's interesting. So he's overriding.
Because it's not Hammer who does that as such. Hammer wasn't expecting Ivan to take over.
No.
So Hammer's created this problem himself, really, but it's a problem that he has no control over now.
Yeah. And then the drones are going off and starting to, you know, shoot up the place.
And they're trying to shoot Tony.
Yeah. And Vanko has overridden Rhodey's suit, so he's controlling him, this big fight that they're going to have. And they bust through and there's all, you know, action. And then we get the laser ropes
back. I wrote
back.
Down classic Disney chase.
Well, yeah, it's a chase and we have to, because there's other problems to solve. Number one, now we don't know where Vanko is. We've got to find him so that we can
shut him down.
Shut it down. And then we have to, we've got to find the computer at least where he's working from so we can shut this down. But now all these drones are on the loose as well. So we've also got to get rid of all of them.
Making everything explode and threatening all the people that are there at the convention.
At the convention, for sure. And that goes to Natasha, to Black Widow and Happy, that are going to go and get Vanko. They're going to go and get that side of the problem. And whereas Rhodey is now chasing Iron Man.
Yeah,
he's got to try,
and he's apologising for it. You know, saying I've got no control.
Yeah,
sorry.
Exactly. So we've got this sort of chase scene of Tony now having to fight Rhodey himself, or not fight him, but he's got to like
fend him off.
Yeah, exactly. Fend him off so that he doesn't get hurt. And eventually Vanko rejoins them, and Natasha and Happy override the system, and
we get Rhodes gets control back just as all of the final bots arrive in the park, and they have a bit of a standoff, Rhodes and Tony against these bots, and they are successful.
Yeah.
You made a mention about the flashing lights.
They all exploded. Yeah. They weren't successful. They exploded.
But you said something about the way that they killed them was like they were trying to kill humans, But they're droids?
Yeah, that's what was it. I'm like, why are you shooting at them? Like, you're shooting at them like it. That's going to kill them. Well, like, you're wasting a lot of... Well, no, that's going to break them.
What I want to know is how much ammunition did Rhodey have to blast all of those...
Like, you're shooting at robots.
So where is he carrying all that ammunition? Is it just endless?
Where
is his ammunition coming from?
It must be.
Anyway.
I did think that the part where they all just sort of imploded, that so whoever, that Vanko had this sort of failsafe that he could just explode them all.
Yeah.
I thought that was cool because they didn't beat the drones. They wouldn't have beaten them. There was too many of them.
Mm.
But was it Vanko that blew them all up?
Well, first of all, we get Vanko. Vanko arrives after this fight. The boys have killed off all these drones.
Yeah.
And they're laying scattered around this park. And then Vanko arrives in his own suit.
Yeah.
Dun, dun, dun.
With his laser ropes.
Now he's got a suit that's similar to the Iron Man suit. And he's got laser, extra long.
Extra long XL laser ropes.
Yeah, laser
that
ropes.
That is so cool. I love the laser ropes.
Yeah, I was very impressed with the way that whole scene takes place. And in some ways, you're kind of like, this is cool. Like he's had this all planned out, the whole thing. You know, he's almost fallen, you know, Tony's fallen into the trap, really. Yeah,
Tony's brought a knife to a gunfight here.
You know, like, and so now it's the two boys against him. The thing is that they fight against each other and it's all very dire, and then they combine their powers to make an explosion. The thing is that Ivan's face isn't covered.
No.
He'd be just burnt to a crisp, but no, Disney magic. He somehow is not burnt to a crisp, even though the front of his suit is all damaged and burnt. He's not damaged and burnt. I'm just like, Disney magic, you know. Anyway, so then that's when he kind of does his failsafe and...
Oh, that's right. And that's when he goes to blow up their...
Blow up all of the drones.
All of the
drones.
Dead drones that are there. They become bombs as well as drones. Yeah. And Pepper is right next to one.
Yeah, this is when Tony remembers that he's Pepper's, his weakest link, so he's got to go save it. Mmm.
And she's looking at this body of this drone.
Yeah.
It's flashing, like not just flashing red, but also like danger. And she's like walking up to it.
What is going on here?
What is this? Like, come on, babe. You know, you've been around this for too long. Let's move on. This is not good. This is not good. And the beeping's getting faster. And even I know that means it's going to explode. Like, come on, get out of there. But he does get her out of there.
I think in real life, things don't do that. They just actually explode. But anyway, I think it's very much a Hollywood thing that they beep, beep, beep before they explode.
But he gets her out of there and she quits because she's in a tizzy and they smooch and
Rhodes is there and they exchange some comical banter, which kind of lightens the mood.
Yeah.
What I think is interesting is how much destruction happens in that place with the drones and everything, and yet we don't see any person actually get hurt.
No.
Like, there's no blood. The whole ceiling of glass smashes, falls down on the audience of about... like,
Thousand.
10,000 people or something, and there's no blood. No. There's no one screaming, I'm cut.
There's never blood in these Marvel movies, never. There might be a smudge of blood.
A little bit on the forehead or something, you know.
Or on the lip.
Yeah.
But there's no blood. There's no active bleeding.
That's where I think, you know, maybe they were perfect to be taken over by Disney, because Disney's like, we like the way you handle blood.
Yeah, but I think that I just think it doesn't need to be gory. I think that are the comics gory?
No, I don't think so.
I don't know.
Don't think so, not traditionally.
They're not going to let Tony become an Avenger, though. He's too much of a loose cannon.
Here's what I think.
What do you think?
I think that Nick Fury is doing reverse psychology.
Yeah.
And he's saying, oh, hang on, we don't think you're a suit. And you see Tony go, hang on, well, actually, I could lend my services.
Yeah.
Whereas if he said, oh, we want you in, Tony would have gone, nah, thanks, I'm too cool for this. And he's gone the reverse psychology.
Well,
if you watch
worked.
That again, people, you'll see. Yeah, that's what it does.
And absolutely setting up for the Avengers coming up.
Yeah.
I think that must be the next movie. But the post-credits scene is Thor's hammer.
Yeah.
We see the big sort
which
of...
I claimed I had never seen before, and I thought maybe it had been put in later on.
I don't think so.
But maybe I just... Maybe it was back in the days where post-credit scenes weren't a thing.
Yeah, so you wouldn't have stayed.
Just wouldn't have stayed and watched it.
No. But may, actually, does Thor come out before the Avengers? Because the Avengers was 2 years after this. I think Thor must come out before this.
Yeah.
Because we see the sort of big crash of...
We get, I think we get the Hulk and we get Thor
and we get
before
Thor
we get
in between.
Avengers. But yeah, anyway, something like that.
But that's Iron Man 2. I loved it.
I wrote down good teamwork.
Yeah.
Yeah. And oh, Pepper and Tony, they get a bit smoochy, which is good. I think that that kind of, you know, that we get a bit of a wrap up of a few of those ideas. I like the way that they have... There's several parts to the end of the movie. They don't just rush it like we have seen in other movies. So they did have the Pepper Potts love connection on the rooftop. And then with Rhodey comes into it, that conversation there. He's sitting there like eavesdropping on them.
Yeah.
But then there's that part of it. So it's almost like a double part there. Then you've got the Avengers wrap up with Nick Fury as well.
Yeah.
Before it ends. Mm-hmm. So they didn't just rush it to the end. They actually took their time to explain a few things. And I kind of liked that.
Yeah, I like that too. Just so you know, the order that they came out, not the chronological order that we're watching them in, but the order that they came out, phase one was Iron Man, then The Incredible Hulk. They came out in the same year. Then Iron Man 2. Then Thor, which is why we had Thor's hammer. Yeah. Then Captain America, but chronologically that happens earlier, so that's why we've watched it earlier.
Yeah.
And then the Avengers, and that's phase one.
Yep, cool.
Of the MCU. Yep. So that's why we had the Thor hammer at the end.
Yeah. That we. What's phase two?
Phase two.
We get Spider-Man coming into it, don't we?
Let me have a look. So I thought it was
and
really
Loki,
cool that Happy
is
was
it Spider-Man. Well, oh Loki's no, Loki's in Thor. Sorry.
Yeah.
But doesn't Loki have his own movie as well?
He does, but not till... No, he has a series.
Oh, that's right. It is a series.
So the phase two is Iron Man 3, Thor The Dark World, Captain America The Winter Soldier, Guardians of the Galaxy, Avengers Age of Ultron.
Yeah, they had some good movies in there.
Yeah. Ant-Man.
Yep.
And Ant-Man. That's it. They're the movies. And then also within that is Agent Carter... like the TV
series.
There's
a couple of TV series.
But the movies are Iron Man 3, Thor, The Dark World, Captain America, The Winter Soldier, Guardians of the Galaxy, Avengers Age of Ultron, and Ant-Man.
Yeah. Ah, cool. Yeah, there's a lot to go through.
Gosh, there's so much to go through. Maybe we should have just done a Marvel podcast. But that was within 2 years, by the way.
Yeah, yeah.
That second one, that's with 2013 to 2015.
Yeah, that's right.
They pumped them out. Whereas
Iron Man
1 was 4 years, 2008 to 2012.
Yeah.
They got all of those. Yeah, so.
Nah, very good. And the other thing too is I think we notice how Iron Man or Tony Stark gets written into the other movies, they're not Iron Man movies, but he's in them.
Yeah.
And that's interesting. So like down the track we see how he interacts with Spider-Man in what is it, Far From Home and then No Way Home, I think.
But also in the Avengers, in those big ones.
And Happy also becomes a bit of a character in the Spider-Man ones as well.
Yeah. I was surprised to see him because I've watched the Spider-Man movies recently, the Tom Holland ones, and I was like, oh, that's Happy. Is he doing the same character? That's cool. Because I didn't realise that he travelled between the two, which makes sense
because he was
Iron Man.
And in this movie, he was checking out Black Widow a little bit.
Mm-hmm.
I mean, you know,
who wouldn't?
Eye candy's there. But I'm like, no, no, no. You've got Aunt May to worry about, buddy. Mm-hmm. So you, eyes off, please. Yeah. Anyway. I love that love story. It's one of my favourite love stories of the whole Marvel universe. He's Happy and Aunt May.
I'm disappointed though that where does Spider-Man fit into this?
Oh, it's later.
Where does Spider-Man fit into the phases? Though I suppose it wouldn't really matter. Phase three. Spider-Man Homecoming.
Yeah.
Yeah, all right. Three. Cool. And Far From Home are all
Phase 3.
Phase 3.
Yeah.
Okay.
Well, so, yeah, look, it was a great movie. Oh, I mean, because it was like over 2 hours long, right?
Yeah.
And, you know.
Just over 2 hours.
Yeah, so to sit down and watch a movie that's 2 hours long. We had to watch it in a couple of segments, I mean, a couple of phases.
Couple of phases. You know, phase one, phase two.
Yeah. So in between nappy changes. But it says on the poster there, a total blast. Yeah, it was a total blast.
It was great. It was good. I really enjoyed it. It was good.
There wasn't anything about it that I didn't like.
No.
Like, you know, we've picked the bones out of a lot of other movies. There was nothing where you went, oh, that's a bit, oh, you can't say that or you can't do that. No. Like, it was very well done.
And it's a movie that's now 13 years old.
And it still holds up very, very well. Everything about it, special effects. Yeah, they must have hit a new standard with special effects then because it's
well, what else can they do with special effects now? Like, really, what else can they do? They can't do anything else. We have hit the peak. That's it.
I think there was only one part where Tony was having a conversation with Rhodes. They're both wearing suits. And you just get this sense that, you know, they're wearing like a green screen onesie and they just need their faces. The rest of it's just computer generated. Yeah, right, right. Yeah, even though it's close
when
up.
When you said suits, I was like suits, like suit and tie. Oh, no. What are you talking about? Right.
No, they're wearing their Iron Man the suits, Iron Man Mark suits. Mark 2 and Mark 3.
Yeah.
Good on you, Mark. And yeah, you can just tell that it's been green screen and it was like they're not actually standing there wearing suits.
Yeah.
And they could have been because it's just a close up talky scene. But anyway, that was the only point where I kind of, maybe it was just because it was.
Do you think they have an actual suit that he can put on?
Yeah.
Like a real one that they use for, I don't think so.
You don't think so?
Nah. Well, or maybe just like a basic.
Maybe one of our hardcore fans out there who's more familiar with Iron Man could tell us that.
Maybe.
Yeah, let us know.
Does he film in a real suit? I'm sure there's behind the scenes stuff that we can watch that would have worked that out for us.
Mm.
All right. So then, how many cool electric whips. Laser whips. Would you give this one?
I'm going to give it a solid. Well, it's going to be at least an 8.
Mm-hmm.
Yeah, and I'm almost inclined to go 8.5. I wonder what I gave Iron Man.
I don't know.
Oh. Yeah, let's just go 8.5. I think it's a very, very good movie.
Yeah.
And it's an excellent sequel if you want to look at, you know, sequels.
Mm-hmm.
And it would be a extremely highly rateable sequel.
It was excellent.
Yeah, yeah. What about you? How many Iron Man suits would you give it?
I think that's what I rated it on last time.
Oh, really? Oh, okay. How many?
That's okay.
How many Black Widows?
Black Widows.
No, how many Hammer Drones would you give it?
I'm going to give it an 8. I thought it was excellent.
Yeah.
I thought it was excellent. Yeah. It was really good. It was entertaining. It had enough humor.
Good flow.
It was funny. It had action. And it wasn't too heavy as well. Like it was really cool. And the villain's really cool. And it was just, yeah, it was a great.
Villains.
It was a great romp.
There was a lot of villains.
Yeah.
Yeah. Different levels of villainy.
Yeah. It was a bit of fun. I liked it. I really enjoyed it. And like I said, I think I enjoyed it more than I enjoyed the first one. But I'm sure there are people listening at home that are going, oh, my gosh, how can you critique this? It's not even on the same level as Iron Man 1. Oh, my goodness.
Purists.
Purists that love the comics. But as someone who's never read an Iron Man comic, but I've seen all three Iron Man movies prior to this, I really enjoyed this one, I think, more than I enjoyed the first one. So I'm going to give it 8. 8. What am I rating it on? Hammer Drones.
Hammer Drones.
8 Hammer Drones. I really
loved
it.
Exploding Hammer Drones.
Do you have anything else you want to say?
Watch it with your kids.
Or maybe not.
No, I reckon it's good. Like we said, no gore, no blood, no disgusting stuff. No,
nothing inappropriate.
Like you really could watch
stuff.
It with your kids. With it's really family friendly.
10-year-old.
Oh, look, any age. Just watch it with your kids.
Well, use your own
They'll
discretion.
Tell you if they're interested or not, you know.
Use your own discretion there. All right. Thank you for joining us for another episode of Presenting Pixie Dust. Make sure you follow us on the socials. We're on Facebook. We're on Instagram. We're also on TikTok. So you can follow us there. We're at Presenting Pixie Dust at everything except TikTok. We are at Presenting Pixie Dust Pod on TikTok.
Mm.
Because somebody else has got at Presenting Pixie Dust and it's a fake account and there's no videos and no likes, no anything. And I'm determined to get it back.
We hate you.
So I'm going to get that handle back. But at the moment we are at Presenting Pixie Dust Pod on TikTok.
the real Presenting Pixie Dust podcast.
Well, they're not even pretending to be us. I'd even be okay if it was like something, a fake account, someone pretending to be us. I'd but be like, oh
nothing.
My gosh.
It's a dead end.
It's nothing. It's just dead. It's a dead account. So I might have to reach out
Give
to them.
Give it back to us,
people. Say, can I have it, please? And then they'll say, how much? And I'll say, don't worry about it. You can keep it. So, yes, follow us on all the socials. And also, if you could, please rate and review and subscribe. It helps people find the podcast, and we really, really appreciate it. And you can listen to Brett's other podcast, Teaching for Dummies, wherever you get your podcasts.
Yes.
If you've got a suggestion, something you want us to cover, a special guest that you really loved listening to that you'd like us to have back, or if you've got a special skill set that you'd like to talk about, slide into our DMs and let us know.
Yeah.
Might be able to get people on the show, get some new guests.
Yeah, yeah. We could definitely include other people on the show. We'd love that.
Absolutely. I think that's it.
Rightio.
All right. Thanks, everyone. See ya.
Bye. Yo, hello, check, VIP. Brr, brr. Yeah. Watch it with the kids. Watch it with your kids. Watch it with your kids. Watch it with your kids. Yeah. Okay, I'm ready.
Yeah.